You gonna put down your phone, Robert?
Are you setting me up to attack me? Because I'm not doing this if that's what you're doing. Because that's what you do. You attack the people that you love. Okay? Attack Jimmy, because you'll you don't know him. Attack him.
Good evening.
You love me. We're friends.
Good evening.
Be nice to me.
Good evening,
everybody. I haven't seen you in days.
Good evening.
This is like an old time. I'm sorry. Go ahead. That's me.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Comedy Cellar Show here on Sirius XM Channel 99. And we're here, of course, with Chris Montella. Dan Natterman is, where is Dan?
I'm right here.
I don't know where he is.
I'm here in spirit. Hey, Jimmy Carr is here. One of my favorites.
Robert Kelly, the founder of the Riotcast Podcast Network and one of the most important stand-up comedians in the country. He has one of the most self-important.
Thank you, Jimmy, for clarifying. I was going to say something, but I didn't want to be rude.
And we have the fantastic Mr. Jimmy Carr, who is, and this is not the first time that we've been in a situation where we've interviewed someone who's like a megastar in another country.
Are you still talking about me?
No. And we don't quite know.
If you're listening in that other country, obviously I've lied to them. Yes, it's true.
We dealt with that with Trevor Noah before he was a megastar here. And then recently, who else did we interview that we talked about?
The guy from France.
Oh, Gad Alamé.
Yeah. I don't remember his last name.
So.
It sounds
he's
like
not famous
he,
here.
It sounds like he made a great impression.
Yeah,
you know who he is, right?
Yeah, I know the guy. Yeah,
he was wonderful.
This the setup here, obviously, the listeners won't appreciate, but it looks as if we're listening into East Berlin. the vibe I'm getting here is there's a lot of wires. There's some strange looking boxes. It really feels. This feels like I feel like I'm in the movie The Lives of Others.
It's like
and if you get that reference, why are you listening to this? You're better than this.
It's the conversation, the Coppola movie, the conversation. But anyway, so let me just introduce Jimmy Carr, and I'm just going to read the first paragraph of your Wikipedia. He's an English stand-up comedian, television host, and actor known for his signature laugh, deadpan delivery, dark humor, and use of edgy one-liners. He's also a writer, actor, and presenter of radio and television. And
that'll have to do.
And quiz shows, talk shows, and all of it.
I also often turn down podcasts, so it's
I was pretty embarrassed about that because SD made it awkward.
I like it. It's kind of fun. Nice to come in early.
Why did you make it awkward?
Because listen, SD has we've had tremendous success as a club because of this quality of SDs. Mm-hmm. But I don't like putting people in a situation where it's awkward for them to say no.
Oh,
I see. It was very difficult for him to say no in that situation.
And my God, I tried.
So
what about me? What about me?
Where else are you going to be?
Well, I had a Jimmy, listen to me. First of all, good point. Second of all,
what's happening in Westchester?
Listen, you make a valid point, but listen.
However, nonetheless,
thank you, Kristen, for saying nonetheless.
Well, I figure I'm on your show a lot, and
I owe you.
Yeah, and you
everything.
No, actually, the reason is because when we were at my house eating dinner the other night, he was telling me what a huge. This is true. It sounds stupid, but how much he admired Jimmy Carr.
Well, we get on very well. I mean, it's a weird thing, actually. You know, kind of doing.
Wait a minute. Get on in America is different than in London. We get along very well. Get on here is we sleep together.
Wow,
that's a stinker. Jimmy.
Get it on.
Yeah, we get it on together. It's an odd thing, isn't it? When you kind of, you know, coming into the club, especially this club, and having that, you just kind of bump into people and kind of you realize how similar your job is. It's very different kind of styles of comedians. I do one-liners. I feel like an old-timey comedian here. Because I do one-liners. No one does jokes here. People talk about their lives, which strikes me as incredibly arrogant. Why would anyone be concerned about your life or what's been going on?
Do you understand? When I knew about Jimmy Carr before I met him, and we were on a show together. What are you doing?
Go ahead.
Stripping down. Well,
one second I'm talking to you. The next second you're shirtless.
Go ahead, Robert. You're on a show together.
And I really thought I wasn't going to like you, dude. I was really getting ready to not like you as a human being.
Right.
Because I was like, this guy is gonna suck. And he not only was the funniest guy on a killer lineup, like we're talking everybody. They had a midget getting standing ovations.
Right.
He would go out after him and just level the place. He was the sweetest guy in the world. Just the nicest guy ever.
It feels like we need to, okay, what's the point of the podcast? What do we do?
No.
This is it. Just chatting.
We're doing
to know you, but
I love it.
Now, Robert is the kind of comedian who really does talk about his life.
Sure.
And there is this whole, and I actually reject it, But there's this whole elitist, or I don't know what the exactly right word is, but the comedians today feel like if you're not being honest and talking about your real life experience, they don't value, for the most part, your comedy.
It is an odd thing. I'm often asked to defend a joke. Like, I'll tell a joke and it will have some offensive words in it, or it'll be about, ostensibly about, you know, rape or paedophilia or something dreadful in society. And it's merely a piece of wordplay for me. Whereas if anyone else were to talk about it and to go in from that angle of saying, this is truth and honesty and my real opinion, and I'm a soothsayer, and I'm trying to tell you something, or you know, when you go away from the show, it'll change your perspective. I'm just an entertainer. I'm just trying to make people laugh.
Yeah.
Well, it's a terrible defense, but it's true. It's just, just trying to make you laugh. If you didn't find it funny, don't listen.
It's not a terrible defense at all. As a matter of fact, I think they need to realize... Sorry. That they're just entertainers also.
But I think you're... Can I say something?
It doesn't matter. You're entertainers. But you may care very much.
Can I speak as the comedians that you talk? Not me, because I love Jimmy, but I think you're wrong. We comics, number one, talent isn't afraid of talent. Talent knows talent. Number two, if you're funny, you're funny. Right. It doesn't matter if you have a puppet, if you... go up No, it really doesn't. I mean, but Jimmy, look at man, the comics I know Jimmy and, you know, his style or truth telling or what Louis does or what Chris does. If it's funny, it's fucking funny. And Jimmy is funny. He's hilarious. I dare you to watch Jimmy Carr and not, even if you don't like that style of comedy, he's the best at it. And all of a sudden, you'll just start cracking up and dying. And then he gets you into your thing. I saw you one night. This is a true story. The little guy, midget guy, goes out, gets a standing ovation, dry humps, does all the stuff. He's, you know, Brad, he's crazy. He just does crazy stuff, and he gets a standing ovation. Bridget goes out. You know Bridget. She just annihilates. She kills. The lady goes, hey, we'll have somebody come up and do some time. He goes, no. Why? He goes, I'm a comedian. You're mistaking me for somebody who gives a shit.
Right.
And he just goes out, no fucking time. They just murdered, and he brought the house to a fucking another level.
But don't you find, it's very kind of you to say, I feel slightly shy. I find it here. Like here, if you go on, Amy Schumer went up the other night, and the audience obviously lost their mind. Right. There's no one hotter right now.
I was in the audience.
They went, great, you lost your mind. I mean, you've regained some composure now. Well done. But they lost their mind. And then whoever goes up next is just the audience aren't thinking, they're not thinking anything other than, we've already had a great night. They live in the moment. That thing of the next comic up is, it's great. They're in a place where they want to laugh.
Right.
Following someone isn't tricky, I think. It's more difficult to follow someone that's had a nightmare.
I think Noam said it the other day to me. It's in your head.
It's
in your head.
I've seen so many comedians get psyched out by who they're following.
But
I'm like, the audience doesn't
say
care.
One thing, though.
They just want to see another good act.
But no, I want to say this. To be a professional, he had a transition joke, which you wrote about Lincoln or something. He came. He just had a joke in his head that he wrote.
He's like a super fan. Like
for that situation, he was like something like, this is like following, you know, this is like going up after Lincoln got shot. You know what I mean? There was some terrible joke he said that literally made the audience go click. Oh, we love this guy immediately. And he just turned him with a joke. So I'm not saying that you could just go up and follow anybody. I mean, if Chris Rock went in an hour at Madison Square Garden, I'm sure I could not go up and follow him and do well, like do great, right?
Well, I don't know, but I mean, it depends what the bill is. I mean, I think that thing, if they've paid to see that person, I never take a support act on tour because I always think, well, you're just throwing someone to the lions every night. If they've paid to see you, that's what they want to see and nothing else. You know, I always think that's a very tough thing when someone's gone, all right, we want to see that comedian, and then it doesn't matter who else goes up.
If it's his audience, then it's a little
Who supported the
scenario.
Rolling Stones the other day? You went to see the Stones, right?
There was nobody.
Yeah, why would they? Why would they bother?
But you know what Jimmy does too, though, I find, correct me if I'm wrong, because I am a fucking super fan of you, but what you do is you tour England every year. You go to the same theaters that your fans know that you're coming back next year with a new hour.
Yeah.
So you... I mean, I know it's a job to all of us, but to you, you're writing jokes for a new hour to go on tour next year to these theaters.
Yeah.
And they know you're coming.
This job is like a joke-eating monster. It just will. It's ravenous. It will not stop.
Well, especially for you too, because
you're getting through three a minute.
You're going fast.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question? You know, I saw that Woody Allen American Masters thing a couple years ago, and something he said reminded me actually of you at the time. He said, "Well, you know, writing jokes." He says, "I could always do that. Like even as a, I could always do that." And I'm what because. Writing one-liners, as you do, seems to me a much rarer talent than being able to go up there and, like, talk about my wife. I could go up and tell a really funny story about stuff that goes on with me and Juanita. And if I had a charisma like he does, I think I could do it. But I don't. You could give me unlimited time. And
don't
I don't.
Ever,
I don't think
ever
I could
take
come
that
up,
joke away from us again.
I don't think I could come up with one-liner.
It's an odd thing. It's a very odd, arcane skill, writing one-liners. It's a bit like... doing a crossword puzzle. If you like, I think that's probably the best analogy I've got. If you like working things out, it's working something out. You hear a phrase or you hear a turn of speech that you just think, oh, that's nice. And then you write the punchline first and then work backwards to the joke.
But were you always able to do it? At what age were you able to do
it? No, I started when I was about 26. And I was a huge comedy fan. I used to go to lots of comedy. And I thought, well, maybe I could give this a go. And I don't think you get to choose your style of comedy. I think it chooses you.
You're right.
I think you get up on stage. And that's, I think, you know, people talk about truth and being themselves on stage. That's who I am in front of 1,000 people. It's me on stage. And I might seem a bit, you know, uptight and trying to get to the point and trying to get to the laugh every second. But that's who I am in front of that many people.
So you've always done that style.
Yeah, I could never do anything else. I'd be really interested actually to try, like, I feel like I've got better as a comedian. The other thing, you kind of grow up in public as a comic. You sort of start off on, you know, I got on TV fairly quickly and I've done lots of TV shows. So you look back at the stuff you've done, you go, well, I'm much better than I was 12 years ago. But maybe in another 12 years, I'll be better again. It'd be interesting to try and change styles, to try and do an observational comedy show. Because occasionally I'll write an observational bit. But then what I'll do is I'll just pare it back until it appears as a one-liner. I'll just
now, do you have to be English to do that?
I feel like it helps.
No, yeah. First of all, your one-liners actually are like really, really shorthand observational bits sometimes. There's a lot of
I was going to say, there's like something
pack a
very
lot in those
not,
small punches, you know?
Not hacky about the way you do. I don't know. Like, it's very, you do think. It makes you think in a very short... You know, the punchline isn't even obvious, even though you're just saying the punchline.
Well, it's a weird thing where you only have to be one beat ahead of the audience with one-liners.
Yeah.
It's that thing of the audience often thinking, oh, I knew he was going to say that. Man, you didn't, but you thought you did.
Right.
I feel I should warn you before I get started. In my act, there is some bad language. I'm not talking about split infinitives. There will be some swearing, and there is some material of a sexual nature. So if you are offended by rude material or cursing... For heaven's sake, don't be a douchebag about it. No matter how much you give a homeless person for a cup of tea, you never get that tea. My father used to say, whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Until the accident. I was filling in a questionnaire. It said, who would you most like to sleep with, anyone living or dead? I put anyone living. When people say they hear voices in their heads, as opposed to where exactly? Hearing voices in your legs. That's properly crazy. If we're all God's children, what's so special about Jesus? I was doing a gig a couple of weeks ago and I got talking to one of the girls in the front row. I asked her name. She said, my name's Pataka. I said, that's an unusual name. You don't hear that every day. To which she replied, actually, I do. In the pursuit of scientific answers, animals have been tortured for the past 100 years. They're still not talking. I'm starting to think they don't know anything. I was out last week collecting for a sponsored walk. In the end, I managed to raise so much money, I was able to afford a taxi. Now, I live quite near a remedial school. There's a sign outside. It says, slow children. I thought, that can't do much for their self-esteem. But look on the positive side, of course, they can't read it. Ladies, if you get a burning sensation when you pee, I can tell I'm not going to win any new friends on this bit, am I? Ladies, if you get a burning sensation when you pee, it could be one of three things. It could be a urinary tract infection, could be a bushfire, or it could be someone's talking about your vagina.
It's that lovely thing of how all jokes work in the same way. Observational comedy can be analysed in the same way, but it can't be written in the same way. It's that thing, all jokes are two stories, and the first story makes you make an assumption that turns out to be erroneous in the punchline. It's the sudden revelation of a previously concealed fact. Am I being
you have to explain enough. Some stuff to Robert, maybe.
Robert's record. So
that just made me, one of the most elegant ways I've ever heard anybody explain stand-up comedy. Elegant.
Don't do it.
Did I say elegant? What did I say?
You put elegant and eloquent together.
Yeah, eloquent.
With a very Bush, yeah. George Bush-like elegant.
Listen.
As far as I'm aware, it's an animal with a huge trunk.
I was going to say, it's a very elephant reference. Way.
Can we start over?
Elegant. I like it.
The inherent irony of saying,
the reason why I got nervous because you both went like this. You were both looking like everybody.
Like, is he going to say it?
Everybody was so like, go ahead, Robert. We're with you. And I was like Charlie Brown.
Yeah, you're so good with verbs.
I really stink.
So wait, I was going to ask a couple more questions. I'm going to let you guys talk whatever you want because I'm very intrigued with talent.
Are you leaving?
No, I'm just saying because I know this probably interests me more than other people, but I really am intrigued with this. So prior to age 26,
yeah,
did you feel compelled to be funny, a comedian? Did you think you had a talent for it?
No, it's a strange thing. I got quite well known for, not so much here, but back at home, I'm known for dealing with hecklers. There's a real tradition in stand-up comedy. And I noticed here, a Comedy Underground or The Cellar, you're playing here. If someone so much as gets out a phone, the staff are on them and shushing them. And I had friends in last night, and they were shushed, and rightly so, chatting away. And it's like in the UK, people heckle. People shout shit out during shows. And I got quite well known for putting them down. And that's really how I got into comedy, I think. Because my group of friends, it was all about being mean to each other. It was all, and it wasn't like I was better at it than they were. Mark, that's what friendship was at college and school. It was about that kind of slightly barbed comment.
You didn't think you were better at it than they were?
No, everyone was funny. Growing up, everyone had a great sense of humor. Maybe I was better at kind of... I was better at it, yeah.
You were better.
I don't want to be a dick about it, but yeah.
Because, like, comparing it to music, like, you know, that like Paul McCartney was, like, always writing songs, like, at 14, he apparently wrote... Right? But Keith Richards, in his autobiography, I talked about this one time...
Oh, no, yeah, I remember. I read it. It's an incredible piece where he just goes... The manager locked him in a room and went, you can't just do covers... Yeah, you two write a song in a kitchen.
He didn't. Here's this guy walking around who has the ability to be one of the greatest songwriters, at least rock songwriters ever, and he has no idea of it. It's not coming out of him. He doesn't feel compelled to do it. It's not like it's overflowing in him. He only did it because somebody said, hey, go do it.
Well, I slightly feel that about stand-up, the idea that, you know, doing a new show every year and touring every year. I think how many jokes wouldn't I have written if it was every 3 years? Because you only, you know, it's that kind of Parkinson principle of like the task expands to fill the time you give it.
Right.
So if I said, oh, it's a new hour of comedy and it's got to be ready in 2 years' time, I'd have an hour in 2 years. If I said it's 6 months, I'd get it done.
Do you wake up and go to your office and write jokes or no. What do you do?
I edit. So the editing is the writing process, really. For me, I write down everything I think of and I try. That Disney thing I think is really inspirational. So Disney used to have three, you know, actual spaces. So he used to have a room where he would be creative and all he would do is be creative. He wouldn't edit it. He wouldn't say that's never going to work. He wouldn't say that's a bad idea. He would just write everything down. And then he would have another room where he would decide what was a good idea and what was a bad idea and be critical. And then he'd have another room thinking about the practicalities of how to get it done.
What if I only have like a 3-bedroom ranch?
You're in all kinds of trouble.
Oh, shit.
But the kind of an analogy for kind of going, you write everything down because you don't know. I never know until I try it in front of an audience. I think that Lenny Bruce thing really rings true for me. The idea that an audience is a genius. The audience get... So you can think, I've been writing jokes for years, and you can get on stage and say something, and the audience just go, no, that's just a sentence.
Yeah. Right.
That's nothing.
Right.
That's not it. And then you think, well, that's definitely going to work. No.
And
it's so universal. It's like in a room of 100 people or 3,000. It doesn't matter.
Do you ever get mad at the audience?
No, I think, they're just infinitely wise. They know what's the point in saying something if it's not funny?
Well, we see comedians, we know them, who they will stick with a joke over and over, and it will not work, and they will not go off it, and they resent the audience for not laughing.
Sometimes, look, I've done jokes where it didn't work, and then I kept with it, and all of a sudden it works.
Well, you didn't keep at it in the form that you first tried it. You keep tinkering with it till you get it to work.
It was literally one sentence that I was saying wrong, and instead of saying them, I said me, and then all of a sudden they accepted it.
Clicked. Well, it's a weird thing, that, isn't it, when you're I think with some of your bits as well, where it's the thing that I enjoy about watching it kind of multiple times is it's the performance. It's the way that you're hitting those beats.
Right.
It feels very lugubrious. It feels like when you're on stage, especially kind of when you lean into the back wall here, it feels like it's just a guy, he's one of us, he just happened to get up. But then the discipline. I look very disciplined on stage because it's one liner after one liner. But you're doing exactly this. You're hitting the same marks in a 20-line story. It's exactly the same every time.
Right.
And it's the magic of those pauses and you're dropping that line at exactly the right time.
Right. And it's like I used to have that joke about walking through the Black Lives Matter rally. And I would say, the lady said, if you think Black Lives Matter, raise your hand. I raised my hand. And I'd say, if you think Black Lives Matter, say Black Lives Matter 11 times. And I did the joke where I went 11. No, people went, ooh. I changed it to, I heard a black guy go, 11? Everybody loves it. Like, it's not, like, it was just as simple.
And that's really a message for America. Say the black guy did it.
Right. There you go.
That's what I tried to
do. It always works.
We do. Listen, but it is just, it's psychological sometimes for them to laugh. You have to just change. You have to say, okay, I get it. Let's change it to this. Oh, yeah, I get it. It's the same fucking joke.
It's sort of the same joke, but yeah. But I did laugh the second time. Yeah.
Yeah, because it is a lot of times. That's the whole joke. It's way too many times to say Black Lives Matter in a rally. Two is good. You know what I mean?
11.
Well, it's also funny to hear you imitate a black guy saying 11 times. That's funny on its own.
It just feels very specific as well. If it was 10, that would not be. 10 is reasonable. It feels
17
decimal.
17 times.
Yeah, it feels like if you say 11 times and then say it really quietly once.
11. Yeah, Black Lives Matter. That's how you end. Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter. Good night.
Good night.
Well, Colin used to tell me, I remember when I used to, when I first started here, was all energy. I mean, just energy.
Oh, my God. Robert used to have a bit about imitating a female orgasm, which was the single funniest thing I've ever seen anybody do.
I'd love to see that. I've never heard
one. He won't
do
it anymore.
Yeah, right.
It would drain him afterwards.
Well, it was just a terrible hacky bit. But
why was it hacky? That's exactly what I'm saying. Why was it hacky?
For me, I can't defend the bit because I don't remember it totally. You know what I mean? There are some bits that I can defend that were, I think, not juvenile, but like just...
easy?
Just easier at the beginning. You know what I mean? For me. But I remember like Colin Quinn used to tell me, you want to, for what I, you know, perform, write, have it all. Try to do it all. You know what I mean? For a guy like me. So it's like, okay, I could perform and have charisma. But, okay, where is a punchline going to go? And I kind of had to hide my punchlines inside of these stories. Because he has punchlines, too, like you were saying before. But my punchline, you know, is kind of hidden in the guy, the character, whoever I'm fucking doing.
And it looks like it just occurred to you.
Right.
Remember that bit about finding food in your house? She hides food. and it's in the, we live in a two bed. Yeah. You really think I'm not going to find it.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, it's behind the cereal. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the wording
the Hershey's
of that
Kiss
the,
one. Yeah. Where I go, now I'm eating the whole bag. It's going to look like somebody blew the Tin Man in the kitchen the next day.
Isn't it flattering to know that he remembers your joke so well?
But this
that
one,
makes you feel good, right? Admit it.
It does make me feel great. But I'll tell you what Jimmy does. He does.
And he punches it up for you.
A guy like Jimmy, though, you know, he's from England. One of the best fucking joke writers ever. He's actually has $1 billion. Did you know he's a billionaire?
He has the great political theorist, Jim Norton, by the
Jim
way.
Jim Norton, yeah.
But he's, you're not a billionaire. Jimmy, what's up?
Hey, man, how are you?
He was just quoting your political theory to me about voting for Trump.
Oh, yeah.
He has a lot of respect for your political acumen.
Bobby, thank you.
You're 100% right.
No, oh, Jimmy does. I have no
Bobby,
idea.
Really? Bob, you thought Bobby made
yeah,
that
I just
comment?
Fucked up the word eloquent. I said eloquent.
Oh, I think you said someone yelled at you as you walked by. Hey, eloquent.
Oh. Jim Norton, everyone, nailed it.
So go ahead, Robert. I'm sorry, you were saying. But that's Jim, if you want.
Hey, you know what? Go fuck yourself, gnome. go ahead, Robert. Finish after that good one. I'm not fucking finished. Go fuck yourself. We move on.
Move on, Robert.
That's called the trip. A transition, dum-dum.
I'm afraid that you define hacky as, in real sense, as what you think your peers won't respect.
No. You can't define hacky of what you think other people will like or not. You, who the fuck knows? You
have I to, said respect. But,
respect,
okay.
Whatever. Respect yeah. or like. But there's things that I did back in the day that I didn't like. Because it all depends on who you admire as comedy. Because I would watch Patrice and Burr and Norton. I watched them become better comedians. And I was like, oh, my God. They actually said something that made me listen, like, as a comedian. I was like, I remember the first time when I worked with Patrice and we had co-headlining, and I realized, oh, my God, I was just on Patrice's show. This wasn't my show. This was, he went up, I killed, but he went up after me and did something else, something better than what I did. Just, there was something, I was just watching like, fuck.
Well, he had a philosopher aspect to him.
But he became that.
Yeah.
He wasn't that. Patrice was doing weird shit for a little while, like fucking college hacky jokes and doing weird shit. And then something happened with him.
Are you familiar with him at all?
He would go through dress phases, too. He never knew what he wanted to be when he grew up. Like, he would wear like all the baseball or what was it, the hockey uniforms or the
Yeah, rings.
The rings. Yeah,
she dressed like he had a barbecue sauce once.
Yeah, just yeah, really hats. Weird shit. He'd go through these phases.
When he passed away, we all got a hat.
Yeah, I still have it.
I have mine. Yeah, mine's up in the studio. We all got Patrice hats because he was changing all the time. All the fucking time. But I think, like for me too, I mean, Norton has changed a bunch too. He's not the same comic he was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, now you can see that he can take whatever and literally take a topic and throw it in his thing. And then it comes out. That's a Jim Norton joke.
Yeah, it's just, you take any idea, you mix it with AIDS, and you spit it out to 40 paid customers.
And then you put Hi Daddy at the end.
It's interesting the thing you say about performance, though, because I quite like the idea of jokes being almost magic. It's almost like you're a drug dealer. Yeah. The audience already has the drugs on them, yeah, and they're releasing endorphins, and all you're saying is like this perfect little spell. And the idea, if you could write a joke good enough that anyone could say those words in that order, you would have to bring nothing to the party. You could have Stephen Hawking, you could type it into his machine, boom, it's a great joke.
Great joke.
You're friends with Stephen, huh?
Yeah.
You're like good friends, right?
Yeah, we know each other, yeah.
Yeah, you know a lot of famous people, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that seems fair.
Yeah. What's... very nonchalant about it. If I knew Steven, I'd be like, I'd have to show you pictures of him. I'd have a shirt with me and him on it.
Well, you know Neil deGrasse Tyson.
No, I don't. I actually don't. He no, does. No.
He called him. What'd you call him?
Neil. We,
Neil,
you know,
Michael.
Neil. No, he.
I have no idea who you're talking about.
Okay,
he's the famous black physicist or astronomer.
Physicist. Yeah,
he's like one of the smartest guys walking.
He runs the Hayden Planetarium in New York. He's the head of
yeah. So okay. He was on Opie.
He does Cosmos, right?
He's Cosmos. Yeah.
Carl Sagan's old show. Yeah.
He was on Jim's show, the radio show with Opie and whatever, and Anthony at the time, and it was very serious science talk and space talk, and I just went. Can you show him a picture? You bring up a picture.
Yeah.
I went. So how, just I broke just to break it up. I read. So how does it feel to be? You know, how was it being on the Love Boat?
Oh,
I mean, come on.
It is funny.
I mean, Isaac.
Oh, my God.
And nobody laughed.
Because it's disrespectful.
Oh, fuck. We're on a comedy show. It isn't NPR. You got a guy.
It was funny. It was funny. But the reason I didn't laugh, I wasn't offended by it. I just did. All I wanted to do was listen to Neil Tyson. And that was. But there was no bad read. It was a funny line. It was a funny line in hindsight. But at the moment, I'm just like, the just genius is talking, and that's all I can focus on.
It's a funny line, but a funnier story. Like, it's a funnier... Yeah.
I thought it was going to kill.
Isn't that the wonderful thing, though, about being a comedian? You can have an awkward, horrible situation like that, and you go, that'll be funny later.
Yeah.
Just add some time. Put that in the bank. That's going to be fine. Don't worry about it.
There's actually, I think having a funny story about a tragic situation sometimes can be better than actually it being funny. I remember one time we were doing a gig with Norton, and I had been killing at this college. I mean, I went there 3 times and just annihilated. Went there and headlined.
SUNY Delhi.
I go with Jim. I think I'm going to kill. I go out, say one wrong thing to the wrong black girl in the front row.
It was a doozy, though.
What you say?
What did you? did you say?
What did you say, Robert?
Tiny thing.
I didn't know they switched from... No.
Consonant-loaded word.
No.
Do you remember what he said?
No, I was implying one. I was just joking.
I know, but do you remember? Yeah.
No.
Good.
I forget what I said. I just said... I called her a sister. So I go, you sister. So I was just trying to assimilate because I was nervous and it wasn't going well out of the gate. So I thought I'd do a little crowd work and they weren't having it. And I literally tanked. And I went upstairs and I was like, oh, at least Jim's going to tank too because this crowd stinks.
And I always tanked there because that was like an urban school. Always tanked.
Buddy, he went out and annihilated. Like he killed every single joke. I was just up there. I was still sweating and breathing heavy.
So should I write this down. Don't say something racist to a girl in the front row. That's a good note.
It wasn't racist now. Let's not get carried away.
No, it was that you had bombed. And so like, well, sometimes if somebody bombs, whoever is not that person, the crowd will give the benefit of the doubt to. Just because they didn't like him, so they're like...
He's being humble.
No, but if he had done well, I would have died.
Here's the best part, though. As we're going home, I'm like, you know, I'm really sad and I'm hungry. I just want something to eat because we didn't eat. And he's like, no, I got to go home. We got to go. It's raining. I got to get home. I'm like, dude, can we just... Now, all of a sudden, we see adult bookstore. Eat! Goes over the highway. The fucking highway where the cops go to pull into the adult bookstore to go jerk off in a pee booth.
Well, I figured I could do
Go ahead.
Some people don't have timing. No. Are you fucking... You're the worst.
I tried. I'm sorry.
Usually when people are looking right... We get two guys looking at you telling you a story and you go, Michelle...
I plead guilty. I saw Michelle there.
I mean, when it's you, though,
I was nervous about her. I'm sorry, Jim.
Don't be. Hi, Michelle.
Robert.
I didn't hear... What'd you say?
I said, when it's you,
we heard you. Shut up. We get it. You're on a plane to the Oscars, you stupid Instagram.
Sometimes life can really get you.
Go ahead. Life was awesome, you piece of shit.
I know. Now you're back here.
Sometimes having sensitivity is a handicap, Robert. But we'd invited Michelle to come on the show, and I just realized, I don't know how long she'd been sitting there.
Just like 5 minutes.
And I was concerned that, we invited her, and she's sitting there, and it's rude.
It was a joke, again.
Okay.
It was a joke about timing. Move the fuck on.
Michelle Wolf has joined us, and she was a writer for the Oscars.
Yeah.
And I think the Oscars were quite well received, am I correct?
I think so. I think immediately after it was well received, and then after the next day or two, some think pieces came out.
What did they
which
say?
Were always dumb.
I think we can't write a full piece about this being good, so we have to write a piece about not liking it.
Yeah,
I mean they've got to fill 3,000 words. They have to. They can't say this was great.
Yeah, I mean,
what didn't they like? What were their objections?
Well, some of them said that he didn't do enough for diversity.
Okay.
We did a joke about accountants being Asian.
Oh, yeah.
And people didn't like that.
It's just pathetic. The idea that you can't say anything right.
Yeah. First of all, we're all wearing or using something that was made by a small Asian child right now.
Yeah.
So the idea that you get mad that you call an Asian kid good at math is so dumb. I wish people were like, oh, you know, women, they're so good at math. You know, like I'd love that stereotype.
Well, and the joke about the fact that small Asian children made it is actually a social commentary in a way.
Exactly.
I mean, if you're smart, you understand it's a criticism of that.
I don't think you have to justify. I think as soon as you get into explaining a joke, you're in all kinds of trouble. Just, yeah, but we thought it was funny. Good luck. Yeah. You didn't like it. You're offended. Oh, well, never mind.
I
just a fancy way of saying my feelings were hurt.
I agree that... That if I were in your shoes, I could see that if explaining yourself is a no-win situation.
Yeah,
but just but not having to explain it, but just observing it. Sometimes somebody is actually twisting the meaning of what you said and using it against you.
Yeah,
and it's because they're too stupid to realize what you really meant. In a case about the Asian kids making electronics, that's not a joke at the expense of Asians. It's a joke at the expense of Western culture. Using Asians as the example, that's the way I take it.
Exactly, it's also people. Their feelings weren't hurt. They just want to complain.
Mm. Yeah, like it's a fun thing to do. Like, everyone's opinion now matters.
Yeah,
which means no one's opinion matters.
But Jim wrote a whole column on that for Time Magazine about the delicious feeling of self-righteousness, or whatever
I forget what it was. Trevor Noah, I think, when Trevor got in trouble, that really annoyed me. People just like it makes them feel it's a feeling you get of control, I think.
Yeah.
What was the earpiece thing? What was that all about?
The what?
He had an earpiece and it fell out. Why did he have an earpiece?
I don't know why he did. I don't know if it was so he could hear himself. No, I don't know if it was so he could hear himself what it was.
So it might have been you got a rap or who knows, you know, there might have been something if there was a time stretch on live TV.
No, what? Like he can't, because there's no monitors or anything on stage?
Yeah, I don't know if he could hear.
How terrifying would that be if it was someone in his ear going, could you just stretch? Brad Pitt is not ready yet. Could you just do another five?
There definitely wasn't someone talking to him in the earpiece.
Did you notice he had a thing in his ear the whole time? Then it fell out and he fucking caught it.
I did see that, yeah.
And then he threw it, right?
Yeah.
He just threw it on the ground. And then...
Oh, that made me happy.
I was just trying to add a little... That was the earpiece.
I didn't watch the Oscars.
It was like a Tom Papa show. No. Nothing. Yeah, it was weird. You could see it just sticking out of his head, too. It was like you couldn't not look at it the whole time.
I didn't notice it until it fell out, and I'm guessing it might have been, like you said, a monitor. Or if he... if he got stuck, if somebody could have fed him one, did they have a monitor going?
They had a monitor with bullet points.
Oh, they did? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I bet it's that thing for, if something goes wrong, if someone gets shot or something terrible happens, they want to be able to communicate with him. They don't want to, what was the Miss World recently where the guy announced the wrong winner?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That guy should have
Steve
had an
Hardy. Steve Hardy.
Well, he would have still announced the wrong winner.
But they would have told him to me. He would have corrected it immediately or something.
Yeah.
No, obviously in this day and age, as a producer, if you can have the ability to whisper in the ear of your performers without the audience knowing, why wouldn't you want that ability?
Well, as a comedian, though, if you're doing your act and you don't have a monitor, Chris is definitely used to having a monitor, hearing himself, hear how loud he is, hearing when beats are, and it's his. If you don't have that, it could fuck you up, especially what he, delivering the way he delivers it. He probably needs to hear.
Well, he must have heard it in the hall as well, no?
Yeah, but sometimes, you do a shitty club and there's no monitor, you don't hear yourself,
right?
It can fuck up your timing.
Also, that room is just, the reason this club works is it's the low ceiling, it's the perfect atmosphere for comedy. That room is just airspace, so all the it's like playing a symphony hall. So the audience could be having a great time and you could be fairly unaware of it on stage. Because it's such a big space.
Yeah.
The laugh just dissipates.
And there's a time delay even from the back of the room to the...
I thought it was great. It must be an amazing thing to be to see the joke. You got two or three in there, right?
And it's a couple, yeah.
But to see that go out, and they always quote
the
figures.
Can you not say what you did?
I mean, I think I can. I don't know.
So go ahead.
What joke did you do?
The Asian kids?
The Asian kids was mine.
Was it really?
It was mine, yeah.
Was I right about it? Was a joke about Western culture?
Yeah, it was 100% a joke about.
Okay.
And I don't know, the whole idea that people get mad about that kind of stuff is
it probably wasn't one Asian person that complained.
No, they did. They did.
Really?
Jeremy Lin complained.
Ted Alexander. That perfect tag as well. What was the tag again?
The tag was, if you're mad about this, tweet about it on the phone that these kids also made.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like a perfect tag because I can't tweet about it now.
What else did you write?
I had the sorority racist.
That's the joke that's just most lauded
Yeah, it was a.
You're a piece of shit.
That was
a
piece of shit. That was a wonderful joke.
I'm the piece of shit. Yeah, thank you.
No, really. I when I read that, I went, well, that's really good.
Which joke was that? I saw the Oscars, but
it was it's the fact that Hollywood is racist, but they're not like
like a sorority.
Yeah, the sorority racist.
Tell the whole joke because it was really perfect.
It's like they're not like Burning Cross racist. They're like they're sorority racist. It's like we like you, Rhonda, but you're not a Kappa.
Right.
Yeah. Would you really hit the nail on the head?
Thanks.
I thought the joke was great too. It's weird though.
You must feel like $1 million. I mean, that's the joke. That is the one line which has gotten the most been repeated the most.
I'm really
gotten the most respect.
I'm really happy with the whole experience. Was great. I mean, like literally, like I.
How come you flew back that night? Because if I was invited
to
the Oscars.
I had to work tomorrow. I had to work yesterday.
You had to work yesterday.
Yeah, I work at Seth Meyers, and
so
I.
So you
had to
get. So they wouldn't give you a day off.
I didn't. I had a whole week off before. I had a week off during the Oscars, and anytime Seth's done any award show, like Golden Globes or anything like that, he always flies back on a red eye that night, and he's in work in the morning. So if he does it, I didn't feel like I could be like, but can I have a day to party? You know, like. Yeah.
But
so you had to leave right after the Oscars.
I went to the governor's ball for about a half hour, and then I had all my stuff packed. It was in the hotel. So I just grabbed my stuff and went to the airport.
Did you get a gift basket?
No, they don't do them anymore.
I am so proud of you.
Thank you.
I don't know if that sounds kind of, but I mean, like, I really like those two lines are the two key lines of the night.
Oh, thank you. I'm very happy. In general, it was great to be a part of it, but I selfishly really wanted to get something on, and I was very happy that I did.
That's not selfish.
I feel I'm a little bit disappointed in just the work ethic. I feel it's a very strong work ethic. And if we were doing a podcast about accountancy or the legal business, I think that would be fine. But the idea that you came back to work just feels like it's not in the spirit of what we do.
Oh, you know.
Have you considered a drug problem? I just think you've got all this talent and youth, and I just feel like if you don't distract yourself a little bit, what are you going
to
do?
Well, you know, I'm unable to love, so.
Yes, you mentioned you're a stand-up comedian. We got that. Right.
Actually, funny, because you said, it was you, had to be you, who said to me one time that if you had to, you had one question to ask a girl at the bar, that would tell you everything you needed to know about that girl.
Yeah.
It's what's your relationship with your father like? Or?
Yeah, it's if you have one question, if you want to pick someone up in a bar, that's the only question you need to ask. How do you get on with your father?
You agree with that?
I don't know. I've never picked up a girl at the bar.
I wasn't. Sorry, I don't know why that came
because
up.
Because she said she
I was not
love.
Hitting on her. Oh, okay. Well, that's.
Did you like the Oscars? Did you? I mean,
I didn't watch it, but I liked
it. I actually shut it off for the first time ever. I stopped watching it. Because I thought. Upfront, funny, great. I loved it, but then it was like, all right, fucking, I get
that's
it.
That's the way it usually is.
You know, but I was like,
it was
like the whole there's not enough black people thing. I was like, you guys did it. You got it. It was funny.
Right.
Now I feel like I'm watching CNN. I feel like I'm watching. Now it's like, what the fuck?
Well, it's what Sacha Baron Cohen's line was very good.
What'd he say?
He said, you know, that he came on as Ali G and basically said, he did his Ali G bit and then went, what about that great black guy in Star Wars? Darth Vader.
Yeah.
A really funny line.
I think Louis' bit was really good.
Louis
probably my favorite. I think it was the funniest thing.
I agree.
The funniest thing all night.
I love Louis' thing. I agree, but I also think it's a lot easier to come in, do a short bit, and leave.
Right.
No, absolutely.
You know, like, I mean, like, that's the same. Like, I feel like that happens all the time at award shows where, like,
we stop and just appreciate the guy wearing an ascot. Okay, go ahead.
when we did the Emmys with Seth, Jimmy Kimmel came on and did a really funny thing and then left. Everyone was like, that was the funniest part. And it's like, yeah, because it's much easier
minutes.
To be funny for 2 minutes.
Well,
but I'm not comparing that. I'm not saying that it's, you know, I think Chris was great. I think it was great, but I think it was just.
But Louis' thing was very pertinent to the show.
What did Louis do?
Louis came out and basically had to introduce the shortest doc. And he goes, look, this is very important.
It was not the shortest.
Documentary.
This one was even shorter.
He did an elegant presentation of the shortest doc.
Listen, it was documentary short, right?
Sitting and drinking.
If you drank that, I would fucking love you forever. Can we get her another coffee, please? Can we get Michelle another coffee? I stuck my fingers in
her coffee. What was his joke?
He said that this is the most important Oscar of the night because you guys get him, you're all millionaires. You get to go home and be millionaires. This guy who wins this, so this woman, drives home in a Honda Civic. And like, this is like really, he makes no money. He has to worry about having this Oscar in his shitty apartment. Like, this is the best Oscar. He's really
good.
Gonna...
And it was like also the idea that they're actually movies that like can make a difference.
Yes.
Right. People will watch something for 15 minutes about a serious subject, like Ebola or whatever.
So the most important movies go home in a Honda Civic and
Yeah.
It was very funny, but he did it in Louis' way. I thought it was hilarious.
It was fantastic.
But isn't that a weird thing about award ceremonies where no matter who's presenting, it's not about you. It's kind of about, I present awards occasionally back home, and that thing of it's never about you, it's about the winners that night. So it's kind of, you do your opening monologue, and then it's kind of, there's 2 hours of just kind of, it's the rest of the awards, and it's their night, and it's Leo's night, and it's everything. But that first 15 minutes is always the best bit, and then...
I think hosting an award show in general is a thankless job. Like, I think it's just something that's like, at best, people are going to say it was fine. You know, like, there's always going to be tons of criticism. It's also just over afterward. And I also think it's just, he signed up to do this before all of this stuff happened.
Yeah, which
is great. So it wasn't like, he didn't want to be in this position. He just was in it.
He's lucky he was, I believe. I mean.
I don't know if, I would say it's, I think he was
that challenge
was a
great, was a great.
Well, otherwise you would have been, you know, it's Revenant jokes for an hour.
Yeah.
And also with some of the movies that are nominated, it's like you're making jokes about a film that a lot of people at home won't have seen.
Yeah.
Like people in the room have seen it and then you're trying to do some Carol material and people are going, I'll go, good luck.
Yeah, we need race, we need jokes about this? Or did you just say, fuck it, I'm writing these jokes about Ray, so...
I mean, I think he gave us some direction about stuff he wanted to do, you know, and I had seen him here a bunch. he came here to work stuff out all the time,
I want to say 2 things. First of all, I think he was lucky to have that situation in the same way, like, you can only be a great president if you're president at a difficult time. He had a very difficult situation, and because he knocked it out of the park, he accomplished something he would have never been able to accomplish.
Well, I thought the last time he presented the Oscars, when he did the Jude Law bit, was the edgiest and funniest. I remember watching that at home and just thinking, this is unbelievable.
What was the bit?
It was a whole bit about wait for a star. If you can't get a star for your movie, wait. You got to wait. Don't put Jude Law in another movie. It was very honest and a real skewering kind of... And it was. Yep. I know that was like the bit that springs to mind, but there was like 4 or 5 bits in it. He's amazingly funny at doing that. I'm amazed they had him back.
It's like I shut it off last night because I'm like, look, if you're not going to take it serious, I'm not. Like, the Oscars used to be this grand thing, and then it became this thing where we kind of made fun of it a little bit, and we made fun of the stars, but they still did their actor thing where you kind of were like, and it was like, oh, now it's like, all they do is just say these fucking idiots and their money and their fucking Oscars and this shit don't matter and fuck it. You know, and it's like it's lost all of its sparkle.
I just want to say my other point. Tell me what you guys think. What I've always object to for a long time is that the function of a host has changed, and I don't think for the better. The host used to come out and do some kind of monologue.
Yes.
And then basically the rest of the night was either song and dance, which like Billy Crystal, or reacting in the moment to what was going on. Canned material now becomes the norm, but almost the entire show. And it just becomes more talking and canned material on top of a layer of the award winners' canned material and the award presenters' canned material, where Johnny Carson would come out and do his monologue. And then the rest of the night, he would wing it. And he would make jokes about everything that was going on. And that felt good.
Yeah.
And I don't think stand-up comedy is the best qualification for hosting. Being an MC, it's not the same function.
Well, I think like when Billy Crystal did it, it was more of a show.
Right.
He would come out and sing and dance,
and
respond in the moment.
Hugh Jackman did that a couple of years ago. Where you know he comes on, he does a song about all the movies, and there's a big song and dance man thing. I think, I mean, for my money, I'm not particularly interested in watching that.
Chris
out there and doing jokes, and it's quotable, and it feels like the next day they've kind of nailed the issue.
That's the first 15 minutes.
But is that
what about an hour or two? You remember when Bill Crystal made fun, of Jack Palance making doing push-ups and or you know they.
Yeah, but is the Oscars the place to fucking make a political statement? I mean, it's a bunch
of... He had no choice.
Yeah, but it's a bunch of people. I know Chris didn't. He had to do what he had to do, but...
Everyone was making their own statement.
Yeah, but it's become a fucking platform now to the environment. Indians, Spanish, blacks. Back in the day, it was a show. It was a time to take all this shit, sit down on a Sunday night, and watch people sing and dance and make
pretty
a little
outfits.
Fun. And now it's you know, everybody's fucking Marlon Brando.
Who do you think? I agree with you. Who do you think would be the ideal Oscar host?
Ooh, that's a good question.
I think Louis C.K. I think Louis would be fucking tremendous because he would probably do something like a song or a dance. He would do something out of the box and learn how to do it and then do stand up and be, you know, talk about.
Amy would be perfect, no?
I think Amy would be great too, yeah.
It'd be amazing, yeah.
I think Michelle would be good.
Because Amy would
be Michelle Obama.
it is an interesting thing, though, of like, you know, who's kind of the best. I wonder what they're thinking for next year. I bet they've already signed someone up.
I bet
they will not sign someone up until. I bet no one will agree to do it until after the nominations come out.
Oh my God, that's true.
Because I don't think someone wants to be in this position that this was this year. Like,
maybe they could get one of the blue collar guys to do it if it's the same again.
Get her done. Get your Emily. Get her done.
Oh my God.
Get it done.
Who's that cable guy?
Yeah, that's Larry.
Let's get him involved.
Yeah. I also think like the.
I think Louis would be great.
Louis would be fantastic.
I think because he has a way of saying fucked up shit, and I don't know, people just don't. He kind of gets it in there and. It's honest, it's real, but it's kind of funny.
But then I really take that point as well about the turning up and doing a little bit within it. Yeah. It's a lovely thing to give people a bit more space in that award show to go, look, you need four or five of those people just to come on, get Louis to present an award, and he's super funny. But tying the whole evening together, if they get Jimmy Fallon, there's more song and dance going on there and the whole show and the whole kit. You can perform with someone. And
I like the show and dance, though, but I'm gay, so...
But yeah. I think there what Robert said, though, there is something sometimes to, like, if there were just those jokes were sprinkled, I think it might have been more powerful. Like, at a certain point, you hit, like, maximum saturation with the concept.
I was just like, I get it. What the fuck? I just want to enjoy. Can somebody sing a song that makes me cry? And Kelly Clarkson, please come out and sing a song.
Ended with Fight the Power. Did you hear that? Ended with Public Enemy. Anyway,
Lady Gaga, it's like, I know. Oh,
we're almost out of time.
Lady Gaga, I like bringing awareness to sexual assault and things like that, but she did it with such a fucking self-importance that it was like, look what I'm doing. Like, I was just like, this isn't about you.
And
Joe
weird.
Biden coming out.
But it's like, but the Oscars became a place for people to fucking, you know, this is what I believe in. It's like, what the fuck?
People who bring attention to causes often do very, very important work. However, the psychology of people who bring attention to cause, I think, is very complex. And very often, it's quite a bit about themselves and wanting, for whatever reason, and wanting to somehow be
admired. But we're talking about fucking movies. We're talking about acting.
No, we're talking about Lady Gaga.
Yeah, but we're talking about pretending at the highest level. And it's like, all of a sudden, it's like everybody's...
pretending at the highest level. I think that would maybe take some of the... Take some of the pretense out of the awards if they called it pretending at the highest level.
I mean, that'd be a great name for a DVD or something, or a special.
This guy is one of the best pretenders. This guy was not attacked by a bear. He pretended he was attacked by a bear, and he's the best at pretending he was attacked by a bear.
He is pretending.
You would think, if you watched him in this thing, you would think he was attacked by a bear, and then he made it.
You know,
but
he
didn't.
No, absolutely. As soon as he got attacked by a bear, somebody ran over with a hot chocolate and some marshmallows and gave it to him.
What you could not see was the four supermodels standing just to the right.
Yeah.
Do you have any, want to leave us with any commentary on American politics going on?
I'm going to run as an independent, I think. I don't want to give Donald Trump a hard time. I know a lot of comics are giving him a hard time. I'd like to see a birth certificate. I want to see that he was born in this country. I know that he's been to Hawaii. There's photographic evidence of him being in Hawaii. And, well, I don't know.
No, but
I don't know where his father's from.
As a Brit, do you look at America and you saw all the insults going back and forth, right? I mean, How do you process that? Nothing like that happens in England, does it?
Yeah, no, exactly. Prime Minister's Question Time. It's every week.
Personal every week insults we like that?
Yeah, every week.
That makes me feel better somehow.
It seems like a healthy part of the debate. You know what? If you're going to run the most kind of important country in the world, I think being able to take an insult here or there, probably not the worst training. It doesn't seem like when they go, it's not nice, he said a mean thing. Yeah, you're going to have to deal with Putin if you get the job.
Yeah, exactly.
And Putin, all right, so I'm surprised at that take. The final thing I wanted to talk, we're a little bit over time, is that Michelle had said some interesting things to me about this whole aspect of female comics and hiring more female comics. And
here? No. I'm sorry, did that come out? Did that come out? I'm sorry, I didn't mean that.
No, sorry.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Wait, what was your...
Well, if I recall that you resent even being classified as a female comic and that you don't think that female comics are overlooked because they're female.
And then stop looking so good.
We get emails. The most common email I get every week is complaints that there's not enough women
on
the lineup.
What would be worse?
Constantly.
A bunch of women on the lineup that were shitty or right. Just good comics?
I mean, it's a weird thing. You can't have positive discrimination in comedy, can you? Because as soon as you put someone up on stage, if they don't get laughs, it's the worst thing you could have done.
Yeah, that's right. And the worst thing you can do for women is put an unfunny woman in the spotlight.
Yes.
Because then people just go, look, women aren't funny.
Yeah.
And the more time you spend complaining about it, the less time you're writing jokes. So just fucking put your head down, write a joke, and work. I don't know. Sorry, I'm also very cranky. I haven't gotten a lot of sleep.
So you don't feel any sexism in the business?
For the most part, I have been helped so much by male comedians. I have ones that recommend me for things all the time. That's how I got to work on the Oscars. I have male comedians all the time that are just, they're so supportive and so nice. None of them hit on me. You know, like, it's like...
Well,
not
over.
No, but I mean, it's like, it's not, there's, I never feel, I only ever feel supported and, you know, even this stupid guy.
Yeah. No, but... You could call it comics are comics. Even we don't. If you're funny, you're funny. It just goes down to that.
Yeah.
If you're funny, you're funny. It doesn't matter what you are, what you do on stage. If you're funny, you're funny. That's it. And funny knows funny. It really does. It's, you know, Michelle's funny. Everybody at this table's funny. Everybody at this club is funny. And we know that too. We walk in.
Right.
So.
All right.
I mean, what she said about women comics. That was pretty. That was well said.
Women comedians complaining to you about that. It's
yeah, absolutely. There
really?
Are
no, there are women comedians, but they're not funny women comedians.
Okay. Oh, well, there you go.
Shit! No, you did. We'll be right back on Raw Talk.
I think my father.
Women ain't funny. Next up, Jimmy Carr, that motherfucker and T-Simple from England.
Didn't my father and Laura Keitlinger get into a big fight years ago, and they started screaming at each other? And my father says, "Cause you're not funny." You remember this story?
No, I don't, but I love your father's impression. You make him a real Jew. He's not funny. Fuck your father didn't act like that.
He's impossible.
I'm not impossible. I do characters.
Are we the first people you talk to today?
No. Too many people.
He is loquacious. I mean, he really
say loquacious again. I'm going to hit you with this fucking raw dog microphone. I'm so tired right now. I was supposed to go
home. You know,
when
I go on your podcast,
yeah, you're very tired and you're very loquacious.
If I sense you want to, you talk. I shut up because I know you're the host. I never talk over you. I never interrupt.
Yeah, I'm way funnier than you.
And I want to thank you for doing the same thing on my radio show.
I did, didn't I? Didn't I? I didn't talk like over
it,
you.
I don't like it when mommy and daddy fight.
I think
no. Look at me. Did I talk over you?
No.
He was pretty good. Today,
I think I have to go on stage.
Okay, we
have
to finish up. We have to finish up. Jimmy, I
what a pleasure.
You don't have
thank
to
you.
Do this. You can just take it off.
I hope you're okay with this show.
I liked it.
I really, really appreciate you.
Jimmy, man. The fucking amazing Jimmy Carr.
I'm joining in. I'm all for me.
I really appreciate you bending to Esty and coming on the show for us. Thank you.
I want to come to England and hang with you.
Jimmy Carr is also one of the smartest.
Do it.
Yeah.
It'd be fun. You do very well, I feel.
I love Jimmy.
You may be the most well-informed guy I know. You know something about
you
everything.
You know a lot of dumb people, though.
That's
fair enough.
That's, wait a minute, wait a minute.
That's, yeah, you have a good point.
Also fair.
Sometimes you have to embrace who you is.
Thank you very much, everybody.
Good night.